Imagine learning in a small group, intimate setting while exploring unique European locations. EU VetCE Experiences offers race-approved CE seminars that combine half-day lectures with time to relax and discover captivating cultures. The CE sessions are delivered in English, allowing you to elevate your career while vacationing with loved ones. Experience the perfect blend of learning and luxury at EU VetCE Experiences interactive seminars in hand-picked European destinations. Elevate your knowledge and recharge simultaneously. Visit euveterinaryce.com to learn more.
Wait a minute. If I'm not Dr. Sonia Olson, emergency veterinarian, who am I? What is my worth in the world? What am I contributing? I don't know what else to do. This is me. It saddens me when I say that, because I look back and I'm like, wow, my view of self got so contracted.
That was Dr. Sonia Olson, and she is our guest today on Vet Life Reimagined. Sonia, she was an emergency veterinarian for 25 years, an exercise instructor for 20 years. And one of the phrases that I wrote down that Sonia said in our conversation is, give yourself permission to have a life you love and show up for it in a healthy way so you have the energy for it. Well, there was a time in Sonia's life where that wasn't the case. She didn't have the energy. She wasn't showing up in healthy ways. And she goes over her career journey. And one of the important things that we talk about this is that you may find a lot of people are not initially accepting of your own self-awareness. So we talk about the challenge of being more self-aware, but at the same time, having to find support who can help us through that. Sonia is also an author, speaker, and coach, and has many exciting things coming this year that you can be involved with. Hint, one might include Africa. So stay to the end while Sonia shares all of the different resources that she has and has coming. Sonia is a beautiful human. I love the term she uses, heartstorming, the coming together to connect on a heart level. So today we will be Vet Life Heartstorming with Dr. Sonia Olson. When did you know that you were interested in veterinary medicine?
Yeah, I know, right? It's just the common thread that pulls our community together. And I love that. So we all come from some little germ, some seed that said, animals, yes.
Please.
So I think that, I don't know that my story is all that unusual, but I would say I was definitely, when I was about 4 or 5, I apparently just had determined that my life was going to be as an animal doctor, that I was clear on that. I marched up to my mother with hands on hips and apparently declared it. She was like, okay then. But I think it was the opportunity truly to be raised in an environment where animals were part of the family. Horses, dogs, cats, and I had the chance to grow up for a bit of time on a farm. I had chickens and ducks, and I really quite truthfully saw them as equals. So they were family. They were as important as the humans in my life. And I've carried that through all the way to where I am today, where, you know, and it's sometimes the animals were more important than humans, and then sometimes the humans were a little more important than the animals. I think I found a nice balance.
Yes, we all share the earth together and have to live in that balance for sure. So you were determined at a young age. What was the vet school experience like for you? Just like getting in and going through those 4 years?
So as I approached even going to college, you know, so I had this real determination that I was going to do veterinary medicine, but I also wanted to, silly thing, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And I took an unorthodox path. So where did I go? I went to Columbia University in New York City. Do they have a pre-veterinary program? They do not. They're all in all three colleges that are part of Columbia University. There's Columbia College, Barnard College, Engineering College. In all of them, there were 6 of us that were pre-vet. And I'm old, so this is in the times where there was no internet and there was books. And so I had to order a book on how does one apply for veterinary schools? And what are the prereqs? How could I create that in a university environment where that wasn't even a track? That was challenging. And exciting at the same time, but I was determined to figure it out. Did absolutely like anybody else go ups and downs. Is this really what I want to do? Do I really have the smarts that it takes? What does this look like for the rest of my life? But I kept coming back to, yeah, no, this is really what my heart feels pulled towards. Getting into veterinary school, again, I had no idea. I didn't have a mentor that could talk to me and say, hey, be realistic about, you know, choosing your state school. The finances matter. The application process matters. So go ahead and stretch a little, but be realistic about it. I had no stinking idea. So I was really disappointed when I was declined from the out-of-state schools. And I did get into my state school, but I had that moment of like, ooh, geez, maybe I'm really not the right person, or I haven't got the right stuff. And then you go to vet school, right? And you're in the classroom, and we talk a little bit about, geez, these are the best of the best. You know, these people have worked hard. They're smart. They're competitive. We're all high achievers. We get in there and the hidden curriculum starts to really make itself known, that you think that you're going to be banded together with your brothers and sisters in arms, that we're going to, you know, relieve animal suffering throughout the world together. And sometimes those elements are there, but many times there was also this element through class ranking and competition of speaking and who gets the accolades. And that was just, that was true, that that was there. And I think for us as individuals, we had to navigate, well, who am I in this conversation? How much energy am I going to put into that versus, nah, you know, I'm not going to worry so much about it. But I do feel like it's an important piece of the conditioning that we go through our training environments. I did go on to do an internship and then all the competition associated with that. And then you go into your practice environment. And that really, I think, is an important element and ingredient in who we are as a community today, large animal, small animal, zoo, industry. How much of that competition, how much of that stoicism and that perfectionism makes its way into those spaces and sabotages us as people and as teams? That's the conversation today. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you still see some of those characteristics, those trends of competition and all the things you just talked about from vet school? Do you still see that going off into clinics and working in the world of veterinary medicine?
It's gotten so much better. I really do feel like it has. I mean, throughout the course of my 20 plus years of being an emergency clinician and team lead and team member, I saw elements of real genuine collaboration. And man, that felt good. We used to, you know, refer to it as feeling like you were part of a well-oiled machine where everybody is moving together towards a common purpose. And it felt good. And even if the outcome was not what we wanted or close to what we wanted, but the feeling that we had of trusting one another and of respect for each other's wisdom and strengths was exactly what we thrive on. And when it's not there, you can feel it too. Where it feels like, boy, it just feels disjointed. And we're all kind of stressing out in our own zones, making each other wrong, making ourselves wrong. So that can be present. And it can come like this, right? There can be moments where everybody really coalesces and it feels great. Other times it feels discombobulated. Patient rounding was a really common place, especially in teaching hospitals and training environments, where you really need to bring some attention to creating the safety for confidence of asking questions and receiving feedback. I feel like we have a lot of great opportunity there to keep doing that better. Yes. So how do we foster environments of growth, of learning, of safety, and of genuine like collaboration, as opposed to feeling like it's not safe to show up as myself?
Yes. And I think we bonded over Adam Grant. And I think he, in one of his books, pulled out a study that they did in medical school for human medicine. And he found that the most successful physicians were the ones that had the more collaborative nature with their classmates. They may not have had the best scores at certain parts of their training, but when they got out into practice, those skills of being able to work with colleagues and to collaborate allowed them to be more successful as doctors. So that's just we're sciencey people. We like science, right? So that's just a great example of how those characteristics actually do help you in the future. So I like that one.
I love that. And the other things that I think that calls forward, and we talk about being your authentic self, being in an environment and a culture that suits and serves and supports you, knowing what that looks and feels like and what it doesn't. Let those be learning lessons and allowing ourselves to pivot and to change roles, places, teams, if that's what we need to do, and not making ourselves wrong about it. Again, historically, the situation, and I think I can speak to America because that's what we know, that we would stick with a particular job, even when we recognized that that really wasn't the healthiest space for us. We got stuck and our identity got really entangled in that space. Maybe not giving ourselves permission to say, I need more, I deserve more. And maybe I would feel better if I was in a different set of circumstances. I know the pandemic absolutely shoved that conversation forward. So we've heard about it. And speaking of Adam Grant, he talks quite a bit about, you know, the inventory taking that we were each doing as individuals and as teams, and how that resulted in the great resignation, which I would reframe that as the great inventory taking and permission giving, where we were giving ourselves permission to say, I'm not happy doing this, or I could be happier. And what does that even look like? And I need to have some time and space to think about it and then try some things on. So I feel like we were giving ourselves permission. We've definitely been giving each other more permission and grace and compassion around it and saying, absolutely, give that a go. That's new for America. And it's certainly new for medicine environments, where we tend to get into a space of, I've got to stay. And honestly, I know I'm guilty of this as well, of going into almost that militaristic thinking that we're in the trenches, we're fighting a battle, I can't leave my squad. And I do not even know how much PTO I like never took because I didn't want to leave my team. And if I'm not there and we don't have a backup, they're more strained. And I didn't want to do that to them, to my detriment, right? So I'm depleting myself, and that doesn't really serve anyone over the course of time. But in the moment, it felt like the right thing to do.
Speaking of your own example, do you mind kind of going back a little bit in your own career journey and or path so far and kind of walking through this evolution, kind of experiencing in clinic? Because you mentioned that you've been working in emergency practice for several years, just a few years. And so if you don't mind sharing a little bit of kind of that path and when you started to realize some of these things and just kind of from your own experience, you know, giving those examples.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's important that everybody's journey is their own, right? We come to it with our upbringing and then our training and the mentors that we had or didn't have to set examples as well as to tell us things and ways of being and doing that we're like, absolutely not. Those are mentors too. Going through the course of my career. So initially just a quick little like ert of a pivot was I thought that I was going to pursue zoo medicine and conservation medicine. Passionate about that. And I still am. Through high school, college, vet school, even my internship, all of that was me laying the groundwork for a very competitive space, for a training position, and then possibly someday, we joke, it's not very nice, but it's true, waiting for somebody to die and so that I could be a zoo veterinarian. There's a lot of flexibility that has to be there. You have to be willing to sacrifice a lot to go through that process. And I witnessed it, had amazing mentors along the way. And just the life circumstances worked out such that the residency that I put all my eggs in the basket of the National Zoo, and their money fell through. And so that they didn't have funding. When the residency was mine, they're like, it's yours, but you would have to do it for free. No. I mean, it's almost close to free what we pay residencies, right? However, no, I can't do it for free. And so I chose to go into private practice at an amazing practice with daytime GP and a really strong avian exotics and wildlife, so that I could continue to grow and build my clinical competencies and stay close physically and towards my competencies with the National Zoo. Funding fell through a second year in a row. And I was finding I really loved emergency medicine. I would not have expected that. I loved the interactions with the clients. I love the interactions with my team. And what I was seeing going on in ZoomEd at the time, especially for my female mentors, made me heart sick. It just made me really sad. And I was like, whoa, there's just so much here. I'm not sure I'm ready to take on. Is this really the path that I want to go towards? And this is important because, I mean, I gave myself permission to pivot away. And I was so conflicted, but I was like, I can sense that I could do this, but I can also see what this is going to cost. And I could see another route over here that I didn't know before. And I could see that being something I might really enjoy, different than what I thought. And I went that route. So, I mean, I think that's really valuable for people to recognize you can pick and choose and pivot and still be a phenomenal veterinary caregiver or leader or whatever it is that you are doing. You're still there along the way. And it may be better than you could have possibly have imagined. You just don't know. So down the road I went and I found myself growing and wanting to be in a space of learning. Yes, but also I'm a teacher at heart. I then sought the next incubator of a practice that was teaching hospital that had formal internships and residencies and had a very strong avian exotics wildlife. And that was in Tampa, Florida. And it was the Florida Veterinary Specialist Practice all the way back in 2003 when we were one little hospital there in Tampa. I loved it. I loved it. I felt fortified in every way. I was able to be in the leadership role, a teaching mentoring role, and every day I was a student. And I was getting the opportunity to continue to contribute to avian exotics and conservation. And over the course of time, overnights take a toll. So as much energy as you might feel like you have and stamina, we are not superhuman. Our systems and structures were not meant to do overnights for two decades, but I did. And I fortified myself along the way by also being a fitness instructor, a yoga instructor. Those things helped me to move that stress out of my physical systems and to develop healthy coping strategies. And along the way, I know that helped me to do what I love to do in vet med longer. And I'm still human. So the systems and structures were like, time out, Olson. You're going to need to do this differently. And, you know, it came down to, I was so, and again, entangled with my role as an emergency veterinarian that I really was fearful of, wait a minute, if I'm not Dr. Sonia Olson, emergency veterinarian, who am I? What is my worth in the world? What am I contributing? I don't know what else to do. This is me. It saddens me when I say that because I look back and I'm like, wow, my view of self got so contracted. And my awareness of who I was outside of my work life wasn't clear to me. That's sad, you know? And so I think though that that is very common in our profession and caregiving professions at large. It's not just vet med, it's caregiving roles that we do that, where we focus and put everybody's needs before our own. And we get to a point of depletion and we wonder how we got there. So it was an opportunity for me to pivot. And along the way, I found that I really cared about the well-being of humans as well. I know what I went through with compassion fatigue and burnout. Now that I was better able to identify it and name it. And I was looking at my colleagues going, whoa, the amount of suffering that is going on that people don't even know what to name it or how to mitigate it. That's not okay. We can do better. And I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of the solution towards helping people feel better, do great veterinary care, and be in the profession as long as they want to be.
Did you see it in yourself first, or do you think you saw it in other people?
That's a really great question. I think that inevitably we see it outside of ourselves first. We don't know what this is. And it's hard to have those moments of self-awareness and reflection. That I also am in a space where I recognize emotionally it's taking more for me to regulate. I'm more irritable. I am shorter in my wick. I'm not communicating as effectively and as compassionately as I know I want to. I'm also getting to a place of doubting my worth, even as a doctor and as a caregiver. I started to doubt my skills and knowledge and my capacity to have positive impact. And I'm such an optimist by nature. So I saw it in others. And then when I saw that actually I was embodying some of it as well and noticing, that's just not me. That's not who I am. What's going on here? Scary and frustrating. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I'm a doctor. I want to fix this. And it's not something you can fix all on your own. And it's not a fix. It's about finding your way towards healthier, better, more alive in the ways that make sense for you.
And you also said you don't do it alone. Can you speak more to that? Who did you reach out to? How do you see that approaching it as in reaching out for help? Like how do you see that being so important to really understanding your own identity?
Well, it's a really important place to look at, right? Is that we sometimes need to have somebody that we trust and that we know cares about us, really, as us, not as our role, not as our job, to say, you matter, and this is what I see when I see you. And we're willing to take it, the constructive feedback as well as the positive feedback, and squirm with it. Because sometimes even the positive feedback is hard to take, right? It's like, oh, God, that's really uncomfortable to hear compliments and thank yous, but letting it in. And having those individuals that you can turn to say, I could use your feedback. I could use your perspective. I'm struggling with seeing a way forward. I don't feel like I know a way forward. It's so vulnerable. So, I mean, it really is. And so you have to find a place of permission giving to yourself and finding those trusted spaces. So yes, I did have individuals in my life that I could turn to inside and outside of Vet Med that I could say, I'm not sure what's going on. I don't know what to do next. I feel lost and I'm scared and my body isn't going to keep being able to do this. And I can feel it going tick tock, tick tock. And I'm like, oh boy, you know, what do I do? But one day, honestly, it came to my husband saying to me, and it was just kind of like a gong. It was like, is this job worth dying for? Whoa. Okay. I mean, here's this person who really genuinely cares about me and my life. And he was so concerned that he had to be that blunt with me to get me to pay attention. Other people have been a little bit more gentle and kind about bringing me towards it, but he knows me well enough to say, I've got to be blunt. And this is what you need to see. And there's more to you and you have more worth in the world than you're doing. You matter to me. You matter to our animals, your family, your friends love you. I just think that that's just a space that we don't visit very much as caregivers, that knowing that we have greater worth in the world. I mean, it touches my heart. You know, I can feel the tears are right there because it's just like it was yesterday. And I carry that forward where I feel like I'm inviting people to know their worth in the world and that they matter and that they are doing great things, really, and celebrate those great things and the things that you are helping to do with animals and with people. And also give yourself permission to have a life that you love and showing up for it in a healthy way where you have the energy for it. So that's the space that I was in. And it took time. It wasn't like it was insto presto pivot. It took some conversations, some strategizing, and ongoing permission giving that I started to talk about. I'm not okay. I'm going to have to step away. Boy, to have those conversations that started moving in closer and closer to my bosses, to my practice leaders, to my colleagues, I'm going to need to step away. The more that got closer and closer to my work role, the harder it was, the more vulnerable it felt. However, what I found was a mixture of reactions. So I don't want to say that everybody was like, of course, Sonia, we care about you. Of course, you should be well. I wish it was that across the board, but it was not. There was people recognizing it in themselves and keeping me at a safe distance, almost like I had something contagious. Like, we don't want that self-awareness. You keep that over there because I'm not ready for that. By the way, that goes on every day. I see it in our veterinary teams. Wow. It's a scary place to visit. I get it. And that self-awareness of like, whoa, maybe I'm not okay. And that it's okay to not be okay is where we need to bring in our community. And there were enough people around me that were saying, it's okay to not be okay. What does it look like for you to stay as part of the Blue Pearl family? How do we do it? Let's get creative. How do you stay part of the veterinary profession and feel like you have value and worth and voice? Let's keep working on it. That was the process, but it took time.
So it sounds like Blue Pearl was the one to kind of open it up for discussion on what could, no, it was you. How did that happen?
I created the situations and the spaces because I feel like I had been with the organization long enough that I had built relationships and trust with leaders and that I felt like I could go towards and colleagues. And we brainstormed together, but there wasn't an immediate acceptance. There were the conversations, which I know from other colleagues, they hear, maybe this isn't the right role for you. Maybe you need to step away. Maybe you don't belong in veterinary medicine. Ouch.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly was said to me, and I know that others hear it when they are trying to assert themselves and try to find a way forward. So it took me being persistent and thinking of being creative and what could this look like. It was also around that time that I started pulling in other resources in the form of a life coach. And I was needing somebody to be a source of experience and resources and wisdom because I'm not the first person to make a professional pivot. What are the things that people go through? People, human, go through when they go through something scary and they need some support. What are those skills, those resources, those books, those articles, the conversations? So I started developing an increased amount of awareness and knowledge. And with that, I felt fortified to keep trying and to figure it out. So it was a combination of things. It was being clear that I needed to do different, speaking up for myself, and fortifying that by grabbing hold of wisdom and resources outside of my immediate circle of people.
We would like to thank our sponsor, VetBadger, the all-in-one practice management software that puts relationships first. Created by working veterinary parents, VetBadger provides all the communication, team workflow, and medical management tools you need to run an efficient practice and get home to the relationships that matter most. In support of parents in VetMed, VetBadger will be offering a signed copy of the book, Pregnancy and Postpartum Considerations for the Veterinary Team, by Emily Singler, to everyone who registers for a demo between Mother's Day, May 12th, and Father's Day, June 16th. To register, visit vetbadger.com and find the link in the description below. Hi, we'll be back with the second half of the show after this quick break. But first, I wanted to take a moment and thank you for listening to the Vet Life Reimagined podcast. If you're enjoying the show, the best way to support us is to leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It really helps us to reach more listeners, and we really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. And now back to the episode. And I like that that was outside of a direct veterinary experience that you also incorporated was that life coach. And do you happen to remember one of the earlier books, articles that maybe this coach had recommended that kind of really helped either comfort you or click something? Do you like remember one of the earlier resources?
And remembering that everybody has a life coach out there that's right for them.
Yes, so I'm sure.
Yeah. Not a one size fits all. And I am a very mindful person. I have been, like I said, a yoga practitioner for a long time. Recognize the space of calm and restoration that provides me when I'm doing physical fitness and yoga and breathing meditation. So I already had that space and I knew I was wanting somebody who at least respected that, right? So I found the right coach for me. And as a wise woman, many decades older than me, outside of veterinary medicine, but she had had human medicine involvement in her life and her career. So she understood medicine and caregiving. She also was very passionate about fitness and well-being and mindfulness. And the two books that she brought towards me early in our coaching career that I continue to recommend because I find them useful. Number one is The Passion Test by Janet Atwood. And she is, I love that the book was written by her and her, at that time then, was her ex-husband. They discovered they were better as friends and co-authors than as life partners. And the book really is a journey about finding your way forward with a decision, a role that you are trying to clarify. And there's a strategy that can be brought towards it. And you do it with an accountability partner. And you help to discern and articulate who you are today, what matters to you, and what does this look like? And much like when you do SMART goals, there's, you know, you list it out and then you get very strategic. You pick your top three or five, but these are the things I want to have. I'm putting my intention and energy towards it. And these are the smaller milestones that I can identify. One of the biggest things to overcome anxiety and perfectionism is action. So knowing how to take those small steps, those achievable steps, help us move forward. And in that moving forward, we build confidence and we move away from the I can'ts, it's not good enough, whatever the story. So the passion test was really useful for me. I found that was very helpful. The other was a bit more of a mindful space, and it was Michael Singer's The Untethered Soul. And it's a beautiful book. And the idea behind Michael's work is that common humanity, that we are all humans navigating this world and this experience in our individual ways, but also collectively. And it has been so for thousands of years before, and it will be so thousands of years to come, that we are here just for this little moment in time, just this little moment. And who are we? Who do we want to be? And so inviting in that time of reflection of what has been and where am I going, but where do I stand and what matters to me? It was such a really lovely framing of the conversation, and it spoke to my heart. And it reminded me that I have the potential to have an impact on the world today, and I'm part of a much greater conversation. It's very humbling.
Yes. And very, very beautiful. But I think it helps go back to really understanding your personal values and your identity on a much broader level than a title or a role. And I know that you are helping a lot of people in these types of conversations. So would you mind just sharing a little bit about what your role does now look like and some of the things that you get to do?
It's a wild and woolly ride, friend. I swear. It's like, what does this even look like? What do we call it? I don't know. Let's call it a veterinary wellness educator. Sounds great. So that was several years ago where I was given the opportunity to partner with social workers that were becoming part of our Blue Pearl community. And they had the opportunity as veterinary social workers and clinical social workers coming from medicine to see how they could translate their knowledge, their skills, their experience into our caregiving environments. What does that look like? Where are the commonalities and where are the iniquities for us as a community? And to hear things through their lens, as well as with all that I had been taking time to accrue as far as knowledge and understanding of what was going on for caregiving and how do we translate that to vet med? Because at that time, that was around 2016, 2017, compassion fatigue and burnout was what we had as far as language. Mm-hmm. That was it. But it was enough. It was enough to go ahead and have us go, wait a minute, that's a thing? You mean this happens to other caregivers and I'm not broken or deficient or abnormal and I'm not alone? So normalizing the conversation, that was where it really began for our community. And for me to shift into the role of where I am today, which is this full-time peer supporter on a team of social workers within the Blue Pearl community. And together, it's been just, you know, really taking time to assess what's needed. How do we bring resources and trainings forward that we can contribute to individual well-being? How do we contribute to conversations that are more compassionate and overall a culture that really looks at how do we decrease the stressors that impact us as caregivers so that we aren't ignoring the fact that there are things that we need to mitigate there? It's not just about doing yoga and taking bubble baths and buckle up, you know, and you can handle this. It can't be just on the individual, but let's fortify the individuals, let's fortify the teams and be looking at the greater construct. So rather than plopping the healthy fish into a toxic fishbowl, let's be putting some good air, you know, purifiers in there, infusing some more oxygen, some nutrients that are good for the fish, some environmental enrichment, and so that little fish can thrive. So I think that's where I feel like we've been making efforts. It's been a journey of discovery. It doesn't nearly go fast enough for any of us. And of course, there's this thing called a pandemic that we just navigated for 3 years. Whoa. So I'm very, very relieved and grateful that our team was in place and ready to support however and wherever we could as we navigated that.
Yeah, that was actually, I hope this sounds okay, but good timing that you were able to have, like you said, you were glad to have this team at least established and were able to dedicate that time to really help people through one of the craziest times that people living on this planet have experienced. And so for those who will be listening, what are some things that you have learned over this time working with social workers, really strategizing on making the better fishbowl, the better culture? What would be some pieces of advice or things that you have learned that could be helpful for other people in clinic who really want to make sure that they are building a really nice culture that supports this well-being and resiliency?
Oh, there's so much, Megan.
I mean, you wrote a whole book about it. I know.
I do have a book, but I think even since the writing of the book, I just narrated for the audible form of it. And as I was reading through it, oh my gosh, the amount that I have learned and grown and the initiatives that have been born since then or have matured since then. I honestly was just wiggly in my seat as I was reading it because I wished I could have shared in the narration saying, and you know what else is happening now? And you know who else is doing this? It's joyous to see that our community grassroots is figuring things out, whether it's in our DEIB spaces, it's in our paraprofessional development spaces, it's in our tech spaces. It's how do we bring forward what we know about the human-animal bond and research, and how do we bring that towards our clients and towards ourselves to recognize all the ways that veterinarians matter in the world? How do we as a global community connect so that we are aware of common concerns? Where are we building strategies and efficiencies to address those very complex problems, but faster as a team? Because we're so much more alike than we are different, no matter what seat you're in and where you are in the world. So throughout this period of time, I've learned a ridiculous amount through my social work teams. They jokingly call me their little social worker apprentice. So my language has shifted. My perspective has shifted. I see things now at a systems level, much more of an epidemiological sort of approach to our collective wellness. And that means that we need to have a real awareness of the layers, of the individual layer, of the team and organization layer, and then of the greater holding. With all of it, things that I was not aware of before, such as trauma-informed approach about the whole construct of psychological safety, about moral distress and empathic conflict and ethical conflict and all the things that are fairly new to us in vet med. But they're coming together now in conversations. And I feel like there are ways through podcasts, through written word, through our modeling and teaching as mentors and as teammates, we're bringing the conversations forward. We're normalizing the language and that we are humans doing amazingly wonderful and fulfilling work, but hard work, emotional work. And it takes a village. And then we have to do it together. So I think that there's a lot of lessons learned that, again, we don't know it all, by the way, Megan. I know we want to know it all individually and as a veterinary community, but friends, we've got to go ahead and recognize that there's so many resources and skills out there that we can grab hold of. We are not the first to go through this, nor will we be the last. So having a multi-system approach, multidisciplinary approach is smart. It's strategic. And it gives us then the capacity to feel better sooner, which I think we would all appreciate, but we get in our own way. That's the other thing I've really seen is how reluctant we can be to do the self-awareness piece and the reflection piece and to let it in that okay to not be okay and to ask for help. We are still struggling with this whole help-seeking concern as a community. So that's a real opportunity for us to go ahead and figure out how do we find ways towards each other and the resources that fortify us.
Absolutely. And like I said, you have a book. but you teased me. You said that now that you've kind of revisited the book when you were doing that, the audio version, you know that there are some other things that you might add. So this is your platform. Please, is there one that you might want to share in addition to people going and reading the book? What might be an additional one that is new that you've encountered? That would be helpful.
Well, there's works in progress, which I think also is beautiful to know. So for an example, I am going to be doing a collaborative workbook that will be complementary to the first book. So it will bring in some new voices and some voices that were in the first book. So I'm looking forward to bringing the how towards the what with the updated knowledge that we have now as individuals and as community. So what have I seen? I love calling out my friend Alyssa Maggi's Empowering Vet Teams and all that's happening with EBT. Holy cow. They are a force to be reckoned with in terms of their support and passion for developing technicians. I look at all the individuals that have been courageous and have had stamina to bring forward the DEIB conversations, looking at Valerie and Nicole and Courtney and Quincy and so many others, Lisa Greenhill, Mia Carey, I mean, in all the different conference spaces and the ABMA.org's Brave Spaces, so many great spaces of learning and language learning and humility that we are learning. I also want to make sure that I call out individuals like Josh Weissman and Phil Richman and all that they're doing around positive psychology and bringing that into our community. Marie Holowachuk's new platform is available for virtual learnings. She's got a new website that is beautiful, and there's a heap of resources. Please get curious and start looking into those spaces. Mentor Vet, mind blown. Wow, what they have gone through and what Addie and others have created with Merck's support over the last 3 years. And now there's going to be other platforms that are coming in, not just for our young colleagues, but there's definitely more content and support coming, evidence-based, applicable. You can tell I just get super excited about all this. But outside of the US, there's Thrive in Australia. And in Britain, there is through the Royal College and Mind Matters, they started this whole mobile platform. So there's some really amazing work being done all around the world that we can look around and say, that's really helpful. What else? And where can I contribute? I really hope people get curious and energized and find their people, find your purpose and your cause.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of, first of all, I've had several of those people on the podcast already. Some are coming. So I love, thank you. You're right. And I want to call out that a lot of those individuals, a lot of them are veterinarians and veterinary technicians who ask that very question, what can I do to help this? There are opportunities, and they can look like so many different things. I'm not saying you have to go start a company or, you know, start a whole another platform. No, but just to say that there are a lot of opportunities to just continue this momentum and take this profession that we all love, right? That's a lot of it is we're just very passionate about what we do, and you can be part of this. So thank you for sharing that.
And I think that it's valuable for you to know that adds to energy to those days where you are struggling to keep it going and remembering your why. Having those other things as part of your personal and professional life that really matter to you help fortify you and keep you motivated. And I know I joke that this is at least Sonia 3.5. I don't know how many more versions there will be, but so I'm also very active outside of Blue Pearl. I do speaking and writing, as well as, you know, developing relationships for collaboration of projects. And I know that that's going to be a part of who I am as a veterinary professional. Is I see myself now almost as my friends would joke and they call me the veterinary Yenta, where I am connecting people. And I love this. I love meeting people. I love hearing their stories, their passions, like you do. I'm sure that's part of what fortifies you. And how do we bring them towards each other? And where are those collaborative spaces where we create resources and spaces for inspiration and healing and learning for our greater community? That feeds my heart and soul. So I look forward to those spaces as I go in whatever way it shows up. because I don't know what it's going to look like in a year, 3 years. But
it's exciting, right?
It is. I mean, rather than feeling like shut down by it, I feel hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I'm a realistic optimist, right? So I recognize that you set your intentions, you have a real true sense of self and of your values and what matters and what works for you. And you just take one step at a time and not get shut down by it being too big. Just take it one step at a time.
That it is a stepwise process. And you've provided several tactful things to go to, I think, your book. How would people find out about your workbook that's coming? Do you have a way for them to kind of sign up for something so they know when that comes out? Or where do you want to send people?
Thank you for that. So currently, what I would offer is that I'm quite active on LinkedIn. Please find me there. I love finding that there's so many more communities that are blossoming in that space. So take advantage of it. Currently, my website is a younger one. It's the www.heartstorming.co. So that's a great space to visit, although my new website is under construction. And the new website is going to house more of my podcasts, blogs, written word, as well as updates on spaces and places where I'm hoping to contribute, whether it's at conferences. I have aspirations to create well-being retreats for veterinary professionals. I'm passionate about conservation. So be on the lookout for opportunities for vet well-being and the South African bush. Just saying. So that's something I'm working on. And I think the workbook will be in that space. The proposal has been put in front of my publisher. She's excited about it. So it'll be a work in progress this year. I hope the Audible book should be out in the next several months. So I will keep people posted on that. The workbook will be a 2024 baby. It's getting gestated as we speak.
Well, if you need any help with the Africa retreat, let me know. I'm a big Africa fan. I went to Zambia. So I always like to end with a final four questions. So the first question is, what is something that people may get wrong about you?
That I'm able to hold still. People who know me that they jokingly, my nicknames over the course of my life have been Energizer Bunny, Tasmanian Devil, Sonic the Hedgehog. I have a lot of natural energy. I'm naturally caffeinated, but I also have the capacity that is a learned capacity of how to be still and quiet. And that now I'm also known as the Zen doctor. So I love that I've been able to harness it in.
That yoga and mindfulness meditation that helps, right? Perfect. The second question is, what is a hidden skill or interest you may have?
Oh, that's a fun one. Hidden skill or interest. I make really great Thai food.
Ooh.
I've been practicing, so visiting Thailand and taking cooking classes there. But also my husband and I, you know, came back and we each have our jams of things that we do. I love international food and then practicing it and bringing it into our lives. So I love cooking. So international cooking is super fun. And I make a really good tom kha. So
That sounds good. So you're going to be cooking for us at this retreat, right? Perfect. Love it. The third one is, what is something on your bucket list?
Oh my goodness. So many things. Well, you know what? Honestly, I got the opportunity this last November to go back to New Zealand and back to Australia, which feeds my heart. Folks, for those that have not been to those places, go. What gorgeous natural beauty there is. And the people are just amazing. But I was this close to Tasmania, which is one of the places that since I was a kid that I've always said, I'd like to visit Tasmania one day in my life. Because they have animals and plants that exist nowhere else in the world. So I would like to go to Tasmania someday.
Very nice. Love that. And finally, you are going to be an expert at gratitude. So what is something that you are most grateful for?
Oh, the opportunity to connect in these ways, Megan. It's deeply meaningful to me. I mean, I think that the opportunity to meet friends that you just haven't met before. You know, I think that we're a community of people that really are generous of spirit and we care And I know that we, by forming connections and by fortifying conversations the way we are here, it's going to have a really big impact on us individually and on our industry. So I'm super grateful to be a part of the conversation, and I'm grateful to you for the platform to bring it. Thank you.
This has been the Vet Life Reimagined podcast. Whether you are listening or watching on YouTube, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Please make sure you are subscribed to catch all these amazing people in our profession. Also, send this episode to someone you think who would appreciate it. Have a recommendation for someone who would be a good guest? Please reach out on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook. There aren't that many Dr. Sprinkles. Until next time, Vet Lifers.